Good evening. Pleasure to have you all. So, those of you who were here last night got to hear Harry Scottdell. I hope you found him interesting. Interesting, nice light stuff. We'll talk about something a little lighter. It's a little connected to something that was spoken about last night, and that is the Thanksgiving, which is tomorrow. In fact, some people were asking whether or not we should have class at all. It could be one of the demonstrations or ramifications of this class tonight. And that is, what should we in the Jewish community be doing to celebrating to celebrate or not celebrate? That's the question. Even before I begin this article that I want to read with you guys tonight, what are some of the issues? I mean, it seems like almost like a non-issue. Like, what would be a problem or a good thing for a Jew to celebrate Thanksgiving?
It's another way to give thanks.
Why is it even an issue? Are you guys familiar? There are Jews who will not celebrate this holiday.
Yes.
The question is why? You know, what possible issues could there be with celebrating a holiday? We'll talk about actually what it celebrates. We're not all because it could be the worship of the ancient and holy turkey. What else? What could else be problematic? I'm sorry? Yes, turkey can be kosher.
It's not the same
turkey.
Well, it's not the same.
Okay, good.
Why do you have to dedicate one day to that?
Okay, Simone is bringing up one issue. Who are we really thanking? Number one. What else?
It's a holiday that's not really mentioned anywhere in the Torah.
Good. So if something is not mentioned anywhere, welcome.
That means it's
okay. So if it's not mentioned anywhere in the Torah, so what? I mean, what about at my wedding, I wore a tuxedo. A lot of people wear tuxedos at their weddings. Is it mentioned anywhere in the Torah that a Jew should wear a tuxedo at their wedding? I mean, there's so many things that we do that aren't necessarily Jewishly based. What about listening to secular music, the Beatles? It's like sacrilege in my home. It's blasphemy not to listen to the Beatles. But what is there any basis for listening to anything that's not authentically Jewish in terms of music? What about literature? Should we only read books from the Torah? This is a very, very important issue because it brings out the issue of something that's not anywhere in the Bible. It's not anywhere in rabbinic literature. It's part of our Western culture, or at least here in the United States. So what is the attitude really when it comes to anything that's not authentically Jewish? What is the Jewish attitude to something not Jewish? Which may not offend Judaism, may not contradict the Torah, or perhaps may, you know, if it does, obviously it might be an issue. So this is just I just wanted to broaden it. I want you to understand there's a lot more at stake than turkey and cranberry sauce. Because really, you know, what does it mean to celebrate Thanksgiving? I mean, what does it really mean? It means you sit down with your family, whoever, and you eat some turkey. So what could be problematic with that unless turkey wasn't kosher? So this article, which is 21 pages long, which we're not going to read all together. Does everybody have a copy?
Is it extra?
No, we have plenty. This is an article written by a great rabbi. His name is Michael Broyd. He's a fairly young rabbinic scholar who is also a professor of law at Emory University. He's actually a perfect individual to write an article about this topic. Thank you. Because he's very much in the world, but also very much a Torah scholar and a rabbi. So let's read this together. As you can see from the picture, there are lots of turkeys. Thanksgiving at the end of November, a secular or religious holiday. Follow with me. Top of the first page. Thanksgiving is a uniquely American holiday. It is no longer, and perhaps never was, a celebration affiliated with any particular religion or faith, although some in America celebrate with religious ceremonies. On a societal level, it is celebrated by Americans of a broad variety of religious backgrounds. This article discusses the halachic issues related to different forms of celebrating Thanksgiving that one witnesses in America currently. In particular, this article will focus on whether the holiday of Thanksgiving is essentially a religious holiday, a secular holiday, or an ambiguous one. And you know, by the way, even before we jump into Thanksgiving, what other holidays might also be questionable based on the issues before us? Halloween, New Year's Eve, Valentine's Day, good. We're not going to tackle all those tonight, but you're going to get a little basis to be able to analyze and understand those holidays as well. So first we need a little history. What is Thanksgiving? Anybody know before we read? Thank you.
That's when the pilgrims had a harvest with the Native Americans in Plymouth.
Good. And what were they doing essentially? They sat down to a meal?
Sat down to a meal for 3 days, and they celebrated that the corn was harvested and that the Native Americans helped them to get used to the new land in Plymouth.
Very good. Very, very good. It must be social studies.
Second grade.
Oh, you're right, there you go. That's perfect. Okay, so before any halakhic analysis can be done, we have to understand what it is. The first Thanksgiving, I'm not going to test you, because you do that to your students, but the first Thanksgiving celebration was held in response to the survival by the pilgrims of the particularly harsh winter of 1622. Not only did the colonists themselves celebrate, but food was sufficiently plenty that even the Indians with whom the colonists were at peace were invited. And that celebration took place on July 30th, 1623, as you all remember, second grade. Now, similar, such celebrations occurred throughout the New England area throughout the 1600s. However, they were only local, and you're going to see that this is pertinent, this is relevant, that it was never fixed and established as a day, really, until when? 1789, because in 1789, Congressman Elias Boudinot of New Jersey proposed a resolution urging President Washington, this goes back, to quote, recommend to the people of the United, I need a little like music in the background, like, dun, 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 to the people of the United States, a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of the Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity to establish a constitution of government for their safety and happiness. By the way, President Washington wrote so beautifully. Anybody's been to the Touro Synagogue? The Touro Synagogue is the first synagogue in the United States established by the Spanish-Portuguese Synagogue. It's technically owned by the Spanish-Portuguese Synagogue on 70th and Central Park West, which is very connected because if you want to go to the Thanksgiving Day Parade, you go to the Spanish-Portuguese Synagogue tomorrow morning for 8 o'clock prayer service, followed by hot chocolate and cookies, and you stand out in front. I do this every year with my family, and now we have an inn there with Maxine, and Rachaim is the rabbi of Spanish Portuguese, and they're very famous because they're their synagogue perfectly situated to watch the Thanksgiving Day Parade. And their synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island, anybody been there?
No.
It's the oldest synagogue in America. And in the back of the synagogue is a beautiful letter written by President Washington who davened there. He prayed there 3 times a day. I'm just kidding. No, he came there once. He was a member. He was like, you know, he used to put on fillin every morning there. He was an MG fellow. He then moved on. His family moved out to Rhode Island and they needed a place to daven. There was no Chabad in those days. Okay, so there's a beautiful, beautiful letter in the back, and he talks about the Jewish people as the stock of Abraham. You got to read the letter. It is a gorgeous letter, and it's very similar to what we're about to read on the bottom of the first page. On November 26, 1789, Washington stated in his proclamation, therefore, and this is important because it gives you a little sense of how the establishment of Thanksgiving, what it is, by George Washington, at least. Therefore, I recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th of November, next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being, capital B, who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may all then unite in rendering unto him, capital H, our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation. This is so beautiful. For the signal and manifold mercies and the favorable interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war. What war was that, guys? Revolutionary War. For the great decree of tranquility, union, and plenty, which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general, for all the great and various favors for which we have been pleased to confer upon us. So what is he celebrating, according to George Washington? God's generosity for what? The country now. It started out, I'm sorry, Jessica started out by saying that it really began as what? As a thanksgiving for what?
For the harsh wind survival.
For the food, the harvest, the corn harvest, right, the crops. Then George Washington now uses it for what? What is he using it for? What is Thanksgiving really used for in his language? Thanking God for?
Peace,
tranquillity,
survival.
Success in the Revolutionary War against the British, the ability to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, right? It's Thanksgiving. It doesn't seem to be Thanksgiving anymore for food from a harsh winter. That's how it started. Now it seems to be Thanksgiving for the country itself. Take a look on the next page now. Page 3. It was not until 1846, when the unity of the country was again in controversy because of the Missouri Compromise and the problems of slavery, that the celebration of Thanksgiving as a national holiday returned to the national agenda. See, even though Washington made that proclamation, it didn't actually become a holiday, because from 1846 then till 1863, Miss Sarah Joseph Hale, the editor of Goody's Lady Book, embarked on a campaign to turn Thanksgiving into a... This is the rabbi's research, by the way, about Thanksgiving, so he can analyze it from a halachic perspective. You have to know the deal. Her campaign to turn Thanksgiving into a national holiday during which workers would not be required to work. How do you know if there's a national holiday? If you don't have to go to work. That's the bottom line. Okay, otherwise, you're just eating turkey. Her campaign culminated in President Lincoln's Thanksgiving Proclamation of 1863. I need the music again. The first such proclamation of a national Thanksgiving holiday since 1789. And since 1863, Thanksgiving has been celebrated as a national holiday and a day of rest at the end of November, either the fourth or fifth Thursday of the month. Now, here's the question. Whether Jewish law should simply defer to the American law that Thanksgiving is a secular, not a religious holiday. We're done with our conversation. If it's a secular holiday, well, we're not done. Then it doesn't pose as much of a problem. But the only problem left would be what? What only problem left could there be? Let's say it's a secular holiday. It's not paying homage to any deity or God that we don't subscribe to. So there's no even tint of what we would call in Hebrew avodah zarah, idol worship, possibly. What would be the only issue left, Raquel?
We agree with the values of the holiday.
What is the value of the holiday? Good. And is it okay to celebrate something that wasn't really mentioned anywhere in Jewish tradition? Which is the issue I brought up before. Can I sing songs? And I know it sounds like, of course, the answer is yes. It's not so clear. Can I celebrate things that don't come from the Torah itself? What is the status of neutral types of things? So he says on this... once this conclusion is reached, the claim is made, little controversy remains. The simple answer is that American law adopts a definition of secular that clearly is religious in the eyes of Jewish law. Things that the Constitution calls secular might still be considered, quote, religious under halacha. For example, in Kamek versus Wehi, a lawyer who wrote this, a rabbi, a court determined that the holiday called Good Friday was a secular holiday. So too, the Supreme Court has ruled that both Christmas and Hanukkah are secular holidays and have secular displays that lack a religious theme. Does Judaism look at Hanukkah as a secular holiday? I know what's become of it. I know it's incredibly commercialized following its Christian partner Christmas in that time of year. But we're going to get to our class in a couple of weeks about Hanukkah. Hanukkah celebrates some very, very important religious themes. And by the way, so does Christmas. Except that's just not the way it's celebrated. Certainly Jewish law views neither of them as secular and would not accept American law's definition of secular as binding on adherence of halacha. So just because America says it's a secular day, by the way, why does America have to say it's a secular day? Because we believe in the separation of church and state, which, by the way, many Jews have defended for many, many years. I remember growing up with this idea. My dad came from a small town in Pennsylvania. He was the only Jew in his school. And every day he used to have to say Hail Marys and pray and say these things for Jesus, because that's what was required in this country in the 1950s. And when you're the only Jew in the class and you come from a home where you're observing Shabbat and you believe not in Jesus, but, you know, it could be very difficult. And Jews fought this for years. And I have a little more of a complicated view on this, because I think a little God in our society isn't a terrible thing. On the other hand, it all depends how it's being used and where it's going. So there's some very important issues that are being raised here. Let's get into the halacha now. We need to analyze this. Now, take a look. Having reviewed the history of Thanksgiving, let's check out the halacha now. What are the issues? The most significant issue is whether it is permissible to eat a Thanksgiving meal with the classical foods that American tradition indicates one should eat: turkey, cranberry sauce. Among the authorities of preservation, three different positions have been taken on this topic. And these three positions have been accepted by various halachic authorities, and that's why, at least in the Orthodox world, you're going to see different Jews doing different things. Because they're basing themselves on different rabbinic opinions that we're going to study tonight. Before these three positions can be understood, a little background into the nature of the prohibition, and this is the major issue involved. There is a prohibition in Jewish law called Chukot HaGoyim. Lo telchu b'chukot HaGoyim, the Torah says, not to walk in the laws of the Gentiles. The question is, what does that mean? What does it mean not to walk in the laws of the Gentiles? Tosafot, one of the great commentators on the side of the Talmud, understands that two distinctly different types of customs are forbidden by this prohibition of imitating Gentile customs, which is, by the way, a verse explicitly mentioned in Leviticus 18:3. The first is idolatrous customs. The second is foolish customs, even if their origins are not idolatrous. Rabbeinu Nissim and the Maharik, two great rabbinic figures, disagree and rule that only customs that have a basis in idolatrous practices are prohibited. Apparently foolish, but secular customs are permissible as long as they have a reasonable explanation. Which, by the way, if you just apply the Thanksgiving so far, it would seem like it really depends on what the prohibition of Chukot HaGoyim, of following or imitating the Gentile customs, is. If it's a purely idolatrous thing, and we can understand that Thanksgiving really has no, you know, paying homage to Jesus, let's say. It's really just Thanksgiving. And I was learning this with somebody yesterday who's a bit of an expert in American history. The original founding fathers were deists. They were essentially Protestants, who many of whom believed in Jesus maybe as a Messiah, but not necessarily as a God. That's how essentially Christianity began, you know. Jesus never proclaimed himself as a God. He proclaimed himself as the Messiah. And in fact, in order to become Christian, initially, at least when Jesus was alive, you had to first convert to Judaism and then accept Jesus as the authentic Messiah. Which is why, by the way, what are the three ways of converting to Judaism? What are the three ways of conversion? Circumcision, immersion in a mikvah, and acceptance of the mitzvot. Later on, years after Jesus' death, when they wanted to popularize Christianity, and they wanted, how do you popularize something? Well, you lose all the mitzvos, and the circumcision, that's not going to sell. But the mikvah they kept, which is called baptism, immersion in a body of water, a natural body of water. And they replaced the observance of the mitzvot with faith. And a very interesting, you know, piece on this, but I'm getting off on a tangent. So the question is, what is the nature of this prohibition to imitate the Gentile customs? Is it just customs that are rooted in idolatry, or is it broader than that? And these two rabbis, Rabbeinu Nissim and Maharik, say that it's not as broad. It's only those customs that are rooted in idolatrous practices. If they're foolish customs, it doesn't matter, as long as they have some sort of reasonable explanation and are not immodest. And normative halacha, says Rabbi Broid, follows this view. Take a look on the bottom. This is the Ramah. If you open up any book of the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, you'll find Rav Moshe Isserles on the bottom of page 2. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. And the Ramah is the very, very authoritative last words on halacha. He says on the bottom, those practices done as a Gentile custom or law with no reason one suspects that it is an idolatrous practice or that there is a taint of idolatrous origins. However, those customs which are practiced for a reason, such as the physician who wears a special garment to identify him as a doctor. Is there any problem with a doctor putting on a white garb? Why is he doing that? So that's a Gentile custom. The truth is there's so many things, there's so many examples. Anything that's not found in the Torah that you see being done is probably a Gentile custom. The question is there some rationale? That can be done. Why? Right? The same is true for any custom done out of honor or any other reason is permissible. Now, as will be seen later, that's the Ramah. Getting back to Rabbi Brody. There are authorities who favor being strict for the opinion of the Gra. The Gra is Vilna Gaon, one of the greatest rabbinic sages who ever lived. The Gra ruled that the only time secular customs are permissible is when they have a Jewish origin. He takes a very stringent ruling, opinion, and he says that the only time you can follow a secular custom is when there's a Jewish origin. According to this approach, secular customs created by Gentiles are prohibited even when their origins are not religious. So according to the Gra, Thanksgiving might be an issue. Additionally, and independent of the halakhic obligation to avoid Gentile religious customs, Jewish law forbids a Jew from actually celebrating idolatrous religious events himself. Thus, a Jew may not attend an idolatrous Indian office party or directly facilitate its observance. Now, he's not talking about most Christmas, New Year's office parties, which are devoid of any religious content. They're just New Year parties, and many Jewish firms, even some Orthodox Jews that I know, throw these types of events for their employees or for their firms. This is talking about an idolatrous Indian office party. You're not allowed to be involved in that. So too, a Jew may not attend a birthday party for an idol worshiper if the birthday party includes worship of idols as well. My children haven't been invited to too many of those, you know, but we're getting into the issue.
What does that mean to worship an idol anyway? Isn't that itself confusing?
Well, you don't see much of that anymore, but according to almost all authorities, Christianity, certainly Catholicism, and the more orthodox types of Christianity are considered by most rabbinic authorities to be, for Jews, to be forbidden to participate in because of the worship of a human being. The worship of a human being is considered idol worship. Idol worship is a very broad term. It's interesting, I was thinking about this last night when Harry was speaking. That's why we really have much more in common with the Islamic world theologically than we do with the Christian world. We just happen to be in a better place with them now sociologically. But truthfully, theologically, Muslims are very, very strict about their monotheism and about their belief that Allah is the only one and true God and Muhammad is merely a prophet, just like we believe Moses Abdil is a prophet and not a God and never to be. We don't know where Moses is buried for that reason, because God was concerned, because he was so revered, that we would create a shrine out of his burial place, and Jews would come or non-Jews would come and they would start worshipping him. So that's really what we mean by idol worship. We refer to inanimate objects or people, which is why the belief by some that the Lubavitcher Rebbe is the Messiah is a very continues to be met with very, very negative response, because. Not because that's idol worship, you know. But once that individual is no longer alive, it's pretty clear from Jewish tradition that individual can't be the Messiah. And we have a lot of bad history with individuals who began being thought of as the Messiah and then turned into a god. It's a very slippery slope, and so that's why there's a real issue with that. Tatiana, do you have a question?
No, I answered my question.
Okay. Yeah.
It's
a person. Mashiach is supposed to be an individual. We believe that can trace his lineage to the divinic dynasty, to human being. It's a person.
So it's not a mortal.
It is a mortal. A human being. A mortal human being.
Yeah.
Right. Let me just get back to Thanksgiving. That's okay, if you don't mind. I'm sorry. Okay, we'll come back to it, okay? Now, I want to share with you three rabbinic approaches.
Cool. Three rabbinic approaches. And you'll hear...
Well, we'll talk about it. Anybody know, you've heard of Rav Moshe Feinstein? He lived in the Lower East Side. He was a great rabbinic sage. He passed away, I think, I mentioned this, I attended his funeral in Israel. His body was buried in Israel in 1985, 1986. I was studying in Israel. Everybody went to his funeral from all walks of Jewish life. There were tens of thousands of people. Nobody can get in. I mean, it was just, and he was just a very adored, loved individual. And it's also interesting for this conversation, he was a great American patriot. He loved the United States of America. He wrote about America as being the government of Chesed, he called it. Because he said that in America, there's just so much allowance, even for the handicapped, for those with challenges. And he was very, he very much promoted in his life recognizing the good that this country has given us for the Jewish people after 2,000 years of being kicked out of virtually every country in the world. So, you know, I can't believe that didn't influence, you know, his opinion here, but listen to what he has to say. Moshe Feinstein has actually four published responses. You guys know what a response is? A tshuva, or one of the most fascinating things you can get a rabbi. It's kind of, any lawyers here, tshuva is like equivalent to what a judge would write when rendering an opinion. Right? You create an opinion. An opinion could be 5-6 pages long. You don't just say, the judge doesn't say, this is what I think the law is in this particular case, but gives you the whole analysis. Listen to what Rav Moshe Feinstein says. He published four responses on the issues relating to Thanksgiving, all of which conclude that Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday, it's a secular one. The first response, written in 1953, discusses the deliberate scheduling of weddings and the like on religious holidays. And Rav Feinstein states, on the question, this is his words, of celebrating any event on a holiday of Gentiles, if the holiday is based on religious beliefs, such celebrations are prohibited. It's deliberately scheduled on that day, even without intent. The first day of the year for them, i.e. January 1st, and Thanksgiving, though, are not prohibited according to the law. Why? Because he doesn't consider them religious holidays. He still says pious people should be strict. He used to use that language when something was technically okay, but you know, he wasn't so comfortable with people doing it. But technically, according to the letter of the law, it was okay. But Feinstein reinforces his understanding that Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday. In a responsa later on in 1980, he said, on the issue of joining with those who think that Thanksgiving is like a holiday to eat a meal, since it is clear that according to the religious law books, this day is not mentioned as a religious holiday. Right? It's not mentioned in the Christian books, it's not mentioned in the Muslim books, it's found in no religious literature. And that one is not obligated in a meal. And since this is a day of remembrance to citizens of this country, when they came to reside here, either now or earlier, halacha sees no prohibition in celebrating with a meal or with the eating of turkey. Turkey sounds so holy, the way he speaks of it. One sees similar to this in Kedushin 66, this is in the Talmud, that Yanai the king made a party after the conquest of Kochlet in the desert, and they ate vegetables. He says, we have a tradition of doing the same thing. When something good happens, we make a meal. Right? And there's no prohibition. Nonetheless, he says, it is prohibited to establish this as an obligation and a religious commandment. What do you think? Why do you think that is? He says, there's no problem with it. It's not a religious day. It's not a Christian idea, day. But you shouldn't observe it in an obligatory way. Why? And it has to remain a voluntary celebration. Without the establishment of obligation of religious commandments, you can celebrate it the next 2 years with a meal. But I think nonetheless, it is prohibited to establish a fixed day in the year for the celebration, and it is only in the first year of the event, like when Yanai conquered and they had a party and not for permanence. What is the issue with that? He says it's okay, but don't do it as an obligation. Why?
Because it might fall under an obligation, under a Jewish obligation, but it might coincide with Shabbat.
Oh, he's not mentioning that, though. He's not mentioning that. In other words, let's say it never falls out on Shabbos, actually, Thanksgiving. But what do you think?
Basically, I think he definitely wants it to feel like it's part of
Then what?
Then place an obligation that is almost religious in nature.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And the second issue, there's also a problem, he says, of adding commandments. Anybody familiar with that?
Right, this would feel like a commandment.
Yeah, it might feel like a commandment, and you're not permitted, according to the Torah, to take away a commandment or to add one. And if this is seen as a fixed, permanent type of thing, it could be construed as a new mitzvah. Thus, this is his opinion, we're going to get to some others. Thus, Rabbi Feinstein appears to rule that Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday, there's no problem with Gentile holidays while observing it. Nonetheless, he prohibits its ongoing celebration as an obligation on a particular day because he feels it's a prohibited addition to the Jewish calendar, or it creates a problem of adding commandments. While Rabbi Feinstein's objections to adding observances will be discussed later, it is clear that he sees no problem in Thanksgiving celebration as a Gentile holiday. He appears to see no problem with eating turkey as a meal and not an obligation. So, and if you go on, you can read on a little, take a look. He says, as proof to the fact that he rules eating turkey is permissible, he says, elsewhere it's obvious in my opinion that even in a case where something would be considered a prohibited Gentile custom, if many people do it for reasons unrelated to the religion or law, but rather because it's pleasurable to them, there's no prohibition of imitating a Gentile custom. Mm-hmm. So too, it's obvious that if Gentiles were to make a religious law to eat a particular item that it is good to eat, halacha would not permit eating that item. So too, any item of pleasure in the world cannot be prohibited merely because Gentiles do it out of religious observance. So he then applies, and then he goes on to say that, okay, I think you got the sense. But he's concerned with it becoming fixed. Now let's go to a second approach. And I just want you to keep these in mind, and we'll have a conversation about all three when we're done. Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, you've heard me quote him before. He was the dean of Yeshiva University for 40 years. Virtually all of my teachers were his students. The first year I went to Yeshiva University, unfortunately, was his last year teaching, and I was nowhere in my own studies and knowledge to be able to get anywhere near his class. So I unfortunately never had the honor of studying under him, but in the modern Orthodox world, he would never like anyone to use this term, but he was the guru, so to speak, in the modern Orthodox world, and continues to be the greatest thinker in my mind in the last 100 years. He agreed that Thanksgiving was not a Gentile holiday. And he ruled that it was permissible to eat turkey on Thanksgiving. And Herschel Schechter, who was one of his main students, who actually just spoke here at the Jewish Center a few weeks ago, he was in Rabbi Soloveitchik's class for over 20 years, and he wrote an intellectual biography of Rabbi Soloveitchik. Well, Schechter writes there, quote, it was the opinion of Rabbi Soloveitchik that it was permissible to eat turkey at the end of November on the day of Thanksgiving. We understood that in his opinion there was no question that turkey did not lack a tradition of kashrut, and that eating it on Thanksgiving was not a problem of imitating Gentile customs. We also heard that this was the opinion of his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik. He was more liberal on this particular issue. I mean, others have also recounted that Rabbi, listen to what he says actually on this, that Rabbi Soloveitchik ruled this way, and that he found it difficult to comprehend how one could consider Thanksgiving a Gentile holiday, or that it was prohibited to celebrate. Indeed, there were instances when Rabbi Soloveitchik implied to his students that he and his family celebrated Thanksgiving, although class was always held on Thanksgiving. When I was in YU, my teacher, who was Rabbi Soloveitchik's student, Rabbi Parnas, he should live and be well, always gave class on Thanksgiving. And he said, listen, I'm not telling you what to do to observe it or not to observe it, but who said that it should be a reason why you don't study Torah? You could still observe Thanksgiving, celebrate it, and still study Torah at the same time. How long can you eat turkey for? So a similar view was taken by another rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin, who was a great rabbinic figure in Israel, who states that it is clear that halacha does not consider Thanksgiving to be a religious holiday, that even if one lived in a society where there are some religious denominations that celebrate Thanksgiving religiously, that would not be enough to make it a religious holiday, as it is clear that there are many secular people who celebrate it. Rabbi Henkin suggests that it would be a good thing occasionally to skip the Thanksgiving meal, as a way of indicating that this event is not a, quote, religious obligation, but is merely permissive and thus accommodate the stricture of Rabbeinu Feinstein. But by the way, Rabbi Soloveitchik never said you have to do that. Soloveitchik, basically, it's all good. Rabbi Feinstein says it's inherently okay, but he's concerned about the fixed thing. So Rabbi Henkin says, so skip it occasionally. Let's go to Rabbi Huttner. I'm going to get the opposite extreme. Rabbi Huttner was of the opinion that it was absolutely forbidden. And exactly opposite, I'm sorry, Rabbi Huttner was the, actually I think Harry last night quoted him, was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, great rabbinic sage of our generation as well, and the head of a very prominent yeshiva called Chaim Berlin. Exactly opposite approach to the rulings of Rabbi Feinstein and Soloveitchik appear to have been taken by Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner. He argues that it is obvious and apparent that whatever the merit of celebrating Thanksgiving for the first time in the 1600s, the establishment of an annual holiday that is based on the Christian calendar in and of itself, he says, is at the very least associated with idol worship, he believes, and therefore prohibited. Rav Huttner argues that such a celebration becomes a, quote, holiday through the creation of an annual observance, and celebrating Gentile holidays is obviously wrong. And he therefore concludes, quote, in truth, one must distance oneself from these types of customs and even from those events that are similar to these types of customs. The truth is simple and obvious. Boom. Rav Soloveitchik was very simple. There's no problem. He doesn't understand why people have a problem with it. And Rav Huttner is like, how could you even think of doing it? An analogous approach, I'll take your question in a minute, albeit less certain of a prohibition, is adopted by Rav Menashe Klein, who also rules that halacha prohibits the celebration of Thanksgiving. Rabbi Klein notes that halacha divides Gentile rituals into two distinctively different categories. The first categories are those things that Gentiles do out of silliness and irrationality. The second are those that are done for religious purposes or for purposes of immodesty. Rabbi Klein then cites the Gra. Remember, the Gra was the Vilna Gaon who had that strict opinion. The opinion that said that imitating the Gentile customs included not only idolatrous practices, but also foolish or irrational ones that were not rooted in idolatry. He cites the Gra who rules that Gentile customs and laws that have no Jewish basis should be avoided because they may have some origin in idolatrous customs of the past. And then there's a similar view expressed by Rabbi David Cohn. Let me just finish with this. He says in the italics, we don't have to read that. Let's just do the summation D, and then we can talk about it. In sum, three premier authorities of the previous generation have taken three conflicting views. Rabbi Huttner perceives Thanksgiving as a Gentile holiday, and thus prohibited any involvement in the holiday. Rabbi Soloveitchik permitted the celebration of Thanksgiving, permitted eating turkey on that day. He ruled Thanksgiving was not a religious holiday and saw no problem with its celebration. Rabbi Feinstein adopted a middle ground. He said that Thanksgiving was not a religious holiday, but thought that there were problems associated with celebrating any secular holiday. Thus, while he appears to have permitted eating turkey, he would discourage an annual celebration that would be festive-like. Okay, let's take some questions or comments. Yes.
Okay, what about New Year's Day and 4th of July?
Oh, well, 4th of July, I think, is actually less problematic, because 4th of July is a national holiday. It is clearly being celebrated to mark the independence of this country from Great Britain and to celebrate America. Thanksgiving, because it was founded by deists who were trying to thank God for initially a harvest and then the country. Listen to George Washington's language. It was all about thanking God. So maybe there is an additional issue there. Although, as I mentioned earlier, the God that they believed in isn't as radically different than perhaps the God we believe in. Not like the Muslims, but still not like the Catholics. So there might be a distinction there. But 4th of July, clearly not. New Year's is a little more complicated, actually, because what is New Year's Eve?
It's really,
what is it?
It's the New Year because of Christ being born.
Right, he was supposed to have been born on that day. Really? Right? Is that correct? That's why the calendar. No, tell me.
No, he was born. He was born in the summer. He was born in the summer.
So what is New Year's celebrating? Besides the New
Year's,
I thought it was his resurrection. Yeah.
Christmas Day is his birthday.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay, it's okay. This is something you're not going to be given a poor grade because you don't know what Christmas versus New Year's. It won't be on the test. That's for the Christian Fellowships Program. What's that?
The 6th of January.
No, but I think that's right. I think Christmas marks his birthday and New Year's is resurrection, I think. We'll do a little more. Right.
No. The Roman calendar.
Right. Okay, but New Year's would, I think, pose a much bigger issue than July 4th. I don't think July 4th has any issues. But even, here's the bigger question. I don't have the answer to this. We know that most people celebrate New Year's not because they're celebrating, you know, Jesus' resurrection or birth or whatever. It's just, they want to get there with their friends because it's a new year. Okay? So that's really the issue. That's the issue. If people are, if something was instituted for a religious reason, but it's only being celebrated, and you have the same issue, by the way, by what other holiday? Halloween. Because Halloween started out as a pagan, and then it also has some Christian responses to it. It's in the end of this article. If anybody wants to read, there's a little section on Halloween as well. Yeah.
Just the idea that, like, the justification for not being able to celebrate Thanksgiving is that it's on the Christian calendar.
Well, he's not looking for a justification not to celebrate it. The reason that it's prohibited, that's the only question.
It's not on the calendar.
Well, whose opinion?
I don't remember
whose. No, we gotta be specific here. The opinion that says it's prohibited, that's the third opinion we discussed. That's Rabbi Huttner. Rabbi Huttner said it was prohibited because he viewed it that whatever the merit of celebrating it for the first time, establishing as an annual holiday based on the Christian calendar is closely associated enough with idol worship, and therefore it's out of the question.
But that's, I mean, we do everything based on the calendar.
That's correct.
It's like I can't call Monday because
right. Well, some people would say, you know, celebrate your Hebrew birthday and not your English. Right. I understand. I don't necessarily agree. And I see the whole, you're bringing up an issue, because if we were to extend Rav Huttner's approach, then it would include a lot of other things as well. That's a good point. But they may do that. Listen, part of the Orthodox world lives a life like that. Okay, and this does reflect a certain ideology. It does. It's interesting. Michael, yeah.
You know, on the Christian calendar, Thanksgiving doesn't fall on the same day every year. It's the fourth, third, Thursday, November,
right.
Or whatever.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like, it's not the same date.
Well, it's not about the date. It's the fact that it's established as a holiday following something that isn't Jewish. It's not on the Hebrew calendar. It's on the Christian calendar. And the Christian calendar is based on Jesus, and therefore it smacks of idol worship. The real question is, how broad is the prohibition of idol worship? Is it that broad? Because according to Huttner, it's quite broad. Yes, as far as I know, I think they're the same thing.
Isn't the New Year's Eve starts at the end of the month as opposed to the Jesus birth by immaculate conception on the 25th
of December? I don't know enough about Christian. I honestly don't know. I just know Gregorian, Jesus, it's all the same. It was based on the Christian belief in their Messiah / deity, and that's how our calendar follows. And that's enough for Rav Huttner to say you can't touch anything that's just based on that. Okay? Yeah.
I'm just curious, if you're celebrating the holiday for national reasons,
right,
not necessarily exactly what the original...
Right, that's the issue. That's the issue. Does that change it? I'll give you a broader issue. You go to yoga class. Some of the yoga positions, and I'm not an authority in this, and I'm not telling you what to do or not to do. I really don't have a position on this. But when you get into certain postures, right, those postures come from Buddhist practice. The Buddhist practice was clearly, in its very core, has some idolatrous roots to it. The Buddha is being worshipped. I mean, now, you go to a typical yoga class or Equinox or wherever it is, people aren't going there to connect with the Buddha. They're going there to forget their crazy lives for an hour and try to get into some other state. And I don't think there's any problem with that necessarily. The question is, how related to it? And I don't have a... I'm not an expert on this area, but that's really the issue. That's really the issue. What's that? That's an interesting class, yeah. I mean, listen, we do a little... Ezra likes to call it yoga. We do a little stretches and this, that, and the other. You know, if you come up with something and it happens to resemble something else, I don't know. I don't think the prohibition of idol worship is that broad. It's quite broad, by the way. But I don't know if it's that broad, because it's gonna prohibit so many things from our lives. Because we live in a Christian world, let's face it. Yes?
Do any of these rabbis, do they talk about the fact that it's... So we don't work on that day.
Like, right.
Everyone has Thursday off and Friday off.
Right.
So it's like a day, it's like 2 days of rest. But for Jewish holidays, sometimes you have to fight to get the day off and stuff. So, like, just the fact that you're fighting to do one thing and the other thing is so nationally accepted, like, it does make it feel so anti-Jewish in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, obviously, from maybe our own perspective, when we're vying to get off Fridays a little earlier to observe Shabbat, or the other holidays, Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot,
yeah.
And here you have a day off where you can, you don't necessarily...
It's not even, like, so important. It's not a mitzvah. It's nothing.
Right, but in a lot of families, it is very important. And I don't want to, you know, this wasn't mentioned here, but there are certain wonderful, I think, Torah values that are expressed in the Day of Thanksgiving that I was going to just mention. First of all, we're called Jews after the fourth of Jacob's sons, whose name was Judah, because we're supposed to be thankful and grateful for the things that we have. Yehuda means to give thanks, lehodot, is to thank. And Thanksgiving is a day to really recognize thanks, and if there's any people who has been subject to so much persecution and oppression, who owes thanks to a country that has really been incredibly hospitable. There's some dark parts of this history, like during the Second World War, when the United States, like all Western countries that were anti the Nazis, still did not open up their doors for Jews, which was, as I say, a real stain on the history of this great country. On the other hand, we've enjoyed freedoms here that have been unthinkable in the last 2,000 years. So if Thanksgiving, at least according to George Washington, is really a day to give thanks for this great country, and you don't have a problem with it, then I think it probably should be celebrated on some level. This is just my own opinion. I'm not in the category of a Huttner, of Soloveitchik, or a Feinstein, but as long as there's no problem with it, then you ask what Raquel asked before, which is, what is in the holiday? And what's in the holiday, to me, is a very, very Jewish thing, I believe. Which, that's why I grew up celebrating Thanksgiving, and that was something my parents taught me. And, and our rabbis never came out and said, don't observe it. Essentially followed the approach of Rabbi Soloveitchik. But as you can see, in other parts of the Orthodox community, they followed other rabbinic opinions that view this prohibition of idol worship more broadly, and therefore it's a Christian thing, or because it's a set thing, and that set thing is going to create, you know. So there are other opinions, of course. So they believe that Rav Soloveitchik celebrated it, yeah. But, you know, he never came out and said, I eat turkey every Thanksgiving, I celebrate it. As he writes here, Rav Soloveitchik did celebrate it. But I don't have a proof or anything like that. I never really saw it as a contradiction to Judaism, to be honest. I just think it raises issues that potentially are, and in some opinions are, actually. Yeah.
Well, I mean, for me, going back to the whole Halloween thing.
Yeah.
Halloween is All Saints Day, which everybody has a day into the schedule and that stuff. So I think Halloween would be more of a problem than Thanksgiving.
It is.
Country.
Take a look on page 9 on the bottom. I wasn't going to bring this up. He calls it, page 9 on the bottom, collecting candy on Halloween. Harmless pastime or halakhic prohibition? So you can read this on your own, but I will give you the conclusion. this is like, we got to look at the conclusion on page 11. I'm sorry, go to page 11, the conclusion. Applying these halakhic rules, last paragraph, to Halloween leads to the conclusion that participation in Halloween celebrations, which is what collecting candy is when one is wearing a costume, is prohibited. Halloween, I know many of us did this growing up, I'm just telling you, this is what he says. Halloween, since it has its origins in a pagan practice, and lacks any overt rational reason for its celebration other than its pagan origins or the Catholic response to it, is governed by the statement of Rabbi Isserles, the Rama we read earlier, that such conduct is prohibited as its origins tainted. One should not send one's children out to trick-or-treat or otherwise celebrate the holiday. The question, though, whether you can give candy to a kid who comes knocking on the door, you don't have to say, I'm a Jew, I'm a religious one, get out and slam the door on his face. That was a joke. The question of whether one can give out candy is a different one, as there are significant reasons based on Darche Shalom, the ways of peace, Eva, the creation of unneeded hatred towards the Jewish people, and other secondary rationales that allow one to distribute candy to people who will be insulted or angry if no candy is given. This is even more so, and what child is not going to be angry when candy is given? This is even more so when the community, Jewish and Gentile, are unaware of the halachic problems associated with the conduct, and the common practice, even when the many Jewish communities, to celebrate the holiday. Thus, one may give candy to children who come to one's home to trick or treat if one feels that is necessary. So the bottom line, he says, is because its origins are clearly pagan or otherwise, and there's no rational reason for doing this other than that. Therefore, it's a problem, but you can give the kids candy. Okay.
I was thinking that maybe an issue that comes up in Thanksgiving is, do you want to get comfortable in your boots? And I didn't see that as one of the approaches here.
That's
but I was actually thinking that to the extent that you're not supposed to celebrate Thanksgiving,
right.
Are there any rabbis who say that's...
No, but I used to have, I had a couple of real hardcore Zionist friends who I studied with in Israel, and they're the guys who stayed there and they did the army, and then anytime they talk about like Thanksgiving or July 4th, they would like, you know, they'd be very negative and sarcastic about it, you know, like, come on, it's just Israel, and, you know, and I understood where that's coming from, but I also think that given the important relationship between America and Israel, and not just strategically or from a practical, but just in terms of shared values, and also, again, having Thanksgiving to the country that has been such a hospitable host, to have that kind of attitude and to say, ah, you know, bah humbug, different holiday, you know, for Thanksgiving and things like that, I think is not an appropriate Jewish response, given the relationship. And the wonderful freedoms that we've been afforded in this country. We have to be appreciative of that. That's what the Revolutionary Army fought for, liberty and independence from tyranny. And that's what Jews have been able to do. We've been able to be as successful as we have. Torah has been able to flourish in America like it hasn't been able to flourish in parts of Europe, where there are no pogroms in this country, and there's been anti-Semitism, and there's been all sorts of issues, but, you know, to just turn your back on that, I just think it's not just un-American, it's not Jewish. It's not Jewish, and it flies in the face of basic, you know, hakarat hatov, of being grateful and thankful for the freedoms that we have. So, you know, I don't think it's an anti-Zionist thing or anything like that. I think you can celebrate Thanksgiving. And I have friends who made Aliyah who live in Israel, and they have Thanksgiving turkey on this day. They do this. Very few of them. The more years that they go on there, the less and less they do it, because it just becomes silly. No one's doing that there, and Thanksgiving is not celebrated in Israel. Yeah.
We kind of touched upon idol worship. And
yeah.
Don't you have to have a conscious decision to be worshiping an idol? Like you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So there are different levels. Biblically, if you have to intend yourself to worship an idol, but you're also not permitted under Jewish law, even biblically, to have any kind of hana'ah. Hana'ah means benefit from. I'm sorry.
He said your turkey's ready.
Come on. you're not permitted to have any kind of benefit from any. This is very, very difficult. This, I get this question all the time. You're invited to a wedding in a church. So I will tell people, go to the wedding, but the church part is actually isn't. Hang on, I just want to make sure.
Everything okay? Yeah. Everything okay? Guys, can you hang on 1 second? I'll be right back. I'm sorry.
Say hi to children.
Here's a question.
What are we talking about? So we're not permitted to actually have any kind of benefit from anything that has any association with idol worship. There's a prohibition. You know, it's mentioned three times in the Torah, don't mix the kid in its mother's milk. So why is it mentioned three times? There's a famous rabbinic tradition passed down from generations. One refers to the mixing of the meat and milk itself. The second refers to eating from it. And the third refers to getting benefit. What would be an example of getting benefit from the mixture of meat and milk? What's that? What benefit, let's say...
Enjoyment of
benefit? No, you're not allowed to eat it. That's right.
Working in a restaurant.
Making money off of it, feeding it to your dog, things like that.
Can you feed it to your dog?
Technically not. That doesn't mean your dog has to keep complete kosher all the time. It just means that your dog, you're not permitted to have benefit.
Okay?
That's also true, anyway. But wait, why am I talking about dog food here? The same thing with idol worship, which is mentioned many different times in the Torah. We're prohibited from engaging in it or from having any kind of secondary benefit from it. And that applies to a lot of different things. I want to say, unfortunately, it's not a very politically correct thing to say, but most forms of Christianity, according to most rabbis, it carries that status. Not Islam. And maybe not certain Protestant, like Unitarian and the like. It depends on the belief. It is a very broad thing. Rav Huttner is really making it, believes it's very, very broad, and therefore Thanksgiving is a problem for him as well. Yeah.
The fact that Thanksgiving falls on Thursday, was that creating an issue for getting ready for Shabbos?
I mean, how would it?
I mean, usually people cook.
Yeah. As long as you have other time to prepare, I don't think it should be an issue, you know? As long as you have other time, you know?
Did you need the leftovers
on Shabbos? Absolutely, yeah. You can have some turkey on Shabbos, yes. From Thanksgiving, I'm sure. Yeah.
Is margarine kosher? Because, you know, when you cook the mashed potatoes that you're going to eat with turkey, often you put butter in it, but someone told me that margarine is not dairy.
Margarine is parva. It's not dairy. That's the whole point of margarine.
Margarine with meat.
Of course, yeah. You just need to check, like anything else, you just need to check that the margarine you're buying has a hashkacha, has a rabbinic supervision, got the little OU, the OK, and all that. But that's perfectly fine.
Margarines I've seen, except for the
meat, have them, yeah.
All of them is OUD.
Yeah.
The worst of them is Fleischmann's, and that is actually par. That's like semi-totally repulsive.
This is just Raquel's opinion. They do not represent the opinions of the Manhattan Jewish experience. We fully endorse the eating of margarine here. Right. But any other, I really wanted to discuss this issue because I think it does go towards a broader issue of our involvement in the outside of the Jewish world. And what is our attitude when it comes to that? And I think the way you analyze any issue, which is the way I think Rabbi Roy did it here beautifully, is a dispassionate analysis of what possible issues could there be in engaging in this activity. You know, somebody once asked me, Rabbi, I was performing this wedding, and they said, "You want to walk down the aisle? What's the procedure walking down the aisle?" I said, "There's no procedure. Do whatever you want." "Well, what kind of music do I have to have when I'm walking down the aisle?" "What kind of music you like to play, you can play down the aisle. There's nothing Jewish about it." Now, but is there a problem with it? So you'll find in certain parts of the community, they won't have like a big walking down the aisle thing, and all the music will be Jewish. Because everything has to have... Now, I think if you want to be intellectually honest, a lot of the music we call Jewish music wasn't all written by Shlomo Carlbach. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't all... Some of the Hasidic nigunim that we have for hundreds of years, they come from German, chants and marches and things like that. They don't really have, honestly, even the Hasidic garb, you know, although some would argue with this and get upset, you know, also was a Polish gentry, garments that people wore at that time. It didn't begin as a authentically Jewish thing. So I think if you chip away at a lot of these things, you're not going to find, you know, an authentically Jewish root for a lot of the things that we do in the Jewish community, as long as you're not in the prohibition of what? Chukot HaGoyim, which is the imitation of the Gentile customs, which according to most opinions has to do with honor worship. Okay, as long as you're not involved in that, you're in a pretty good place. And then you have to ask yourself a second question. So what is it about that American custom, walking down the aisle, wearing a tuxedo, wearing a white robe, if you're a doctor, does it add something? And is it something which is consistent with Jewish values? And as long as the answer to that question is yes, and it doesn't have idolatrous roots, then there's not an issue with it. And that is why you're going to find, you know, how are most religious Jews dressed? Well, it depends, right? Some religious Jews will even wear pink shirts, blue shirts, right? But other religious Jews will only wear white shirts and black pants. So what is that? Is there something special about... Right, so this is a whole interesting issue, and I personally don't believe, and I think that's one of the beauties of Judaism, is trying to synthesize the greatness of Torah and of the culture and society in which we live. As long as we're not, you know, synthesizing the schmutz of some of the schmutz that's in our society and the beauty of Jewish culture. So when I study at Yeshiva University and you walk all over the place, it's got a big emblem that says Torah Umada. What do those words mean? Torah and science. Because we were studying until 3 o'clock every day, Talmudic and Biblical studies, and from 3 till about 8, we studied secular studies like any college, university. I did this for 7-8 years. And a lot of people in the modern Orthodox world do this. You start when you're at the age of 5. My kids come home at school at 5:30 every day. Because you're starting at 9 in the morning, or 8 in the morning actually, and then and this is my schedule of my kids, just called. At 9 in the morning until 2:30, they're doing religious studies. From 2:30 to 5:30, they have secular studies. And they're synthesized. It's hard. It's hard combining. But it's very rigorous, but it's amazing. But when I always heard those great lectures about synthesizing, it was synthesizing the great writings of William Shakespeare and the music of Beethoven with the greatest of Torah's traditions. It wasn't necessarily Madonna and Torah, you know what I mean? It was more like Shakespeare and, you know, Mozart and so on and so forth. You know, and where you draw the line where, because you have Torah values, and you take those Torah values and you use them to analyze the secular thing you're involved in. And if it doesn't pose a problem, and it actually can enhance your engagement with God. And I'll quote one, I know you want to go, but we're going to finish in a minute, but this is really the point of this. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who's the son-in-law of Rabbi Soloveitchik, is considered, in my mind, perhaps one of the greatest minds left in our generation. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein is the Rosh Yeshiva of Gush. He has a PhD in English literature from Harvard. And he says that unless you study the writings, I don't even know who some of these guys are, that he studied and taught, you can't really develop enough of an appreciation for the human condition and enough of an appreciation for the ability to for how human beings can express themselves. And he wrote about that in English literature. And he's one of the great rabbis at Yeshiva University. And I studied also with Rabbi Tendler, who's a biologist, who's actually Moshe Feinstein's son-in-law, who said that it's only through studying science in chemistry, in physics, that you're going to be able to develop the highest level of appreciation for God. And that if you only study Torah and you limit yourself to things that are, quote, only authentically Jewish, you're going to be missing out on opportunities out there in the world that are going to help you connect with Hashem. And that synthesized with the Torah, you're going to come out with something much greater than the Torah alone, believe it or not. Now that is heresy in some circles. Some circles would say Torah only. Anything else that's not, by definition, does not have any status. And that is a different philosophy. And the philosophy of modern Orthodoxy and Rav Soloveitchik was to try to bring these together. But I have to tell you, it's much more difficult. Because we're probably more tapped into, you know, pop culture than we are into classical culture. And pop culture carries with it all sorts of wonderful things, but probably more, or at least as much, for the lack of a better term, schmutzy things too. And we have to be able to tell the difference and to say that this is something which is worthy of synthesizing with my Torah tradition and this is not. And I think that's another way of analyzing Thanksgiving. And I very much believe, as long as there's no prohibition, again, of imitating the Gentile, you know, that verse in the Torah, which is based, according to most opinions, on idolatrous practices, then you ask, what is it about Thanksgiving? And again, I think it's great in terms of synthesizing our Torah tradition with that great part of American culture. That's me speaking, obviously. Not every rabbi would agree. Let's take one last question.
My thought is, you're not supposed to look at anything other than Jewish knowledge. Okay, then
that is a not a widespread view, but a
certain circles believe that.
Yeah.
Why did all the other knowledge even come about? It would seem like, why would God even create other types of people who are not Jews if we're not supposed to interact with them at all?
Because that's for them. That's for them. They would just say, I mean, I can't say what they would say, you know, but I would imagine you could respond to that by saying that they're struggling to find the truth and to find their own wisdom, and that's what they do. But it's not Torah, it's not from God, and therefore it doesn't have, you know.
But they're human, so they are some.
Of course, right. I don't believe. I think some of the greatest of greats who are held up as some of the greatest right wing, you know, rabbinic authorities, they studied secular studies. Not systematically necessarily, but certainly the hard sciences and mathematics and science. It's you get a little more of a controversy when you get to the humanities and the social sciences, to political science and sociology and philosophy and things like that. That's where you have more only of the Yeshiva University and modern Orthodox that sort of embraces that. I don't think you have in the Haredi world such an aversion to studying science, unless it comes to the Torah. And in some schools they'll pull out from the science books references to evolution or, you know, the Neanderthal man and things like that. Whereas in other, more of the modern Orthodox institutions, they will grapple with those issues and try to understand the Torah perspective on that. So there are different views on that, obviously. But I can't tell you why, you know, obviously it had to exist for a reason, but they would just say, it's not for us though. It's for them, it's not for us. But who's the greatest model for this, rabbinically? Maimonides, because Maimonides relied very much for parts of his wisdom from Aristotle and Greek philosophy, and in our own generation, Rabbi Soloveitchik became a huge scholar. He was considered one of the fathers, I think, the father of Jewish existential philosophy. And he studied under some of the greats of the University of Berlin. Now, some would be a little more cynical and say he only did that to be able to speak in the language, the vernacular, so he could give over the Torah message in a more effective way. It was just a means to an end. It was not because he really believed in it. I don't believe that. I think he was a real scholar and he was trying to arrive at the truth, and he'll go anywhere to find it. But that's for another discussion, but it's very much connected to this one. I want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your turkey. And we will, of course, be having services here on Shabbat. I wanted to mention, Hanukkah is coming up also. We're going to be having in a few Wednesday nights, in lieu of this class, we're going to be having a Hanukkah Chagiga at Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. And you're going to be subjected to the wonderful sounds of the MGE band. playing authentically Jewish and authentically not Jewish music in celebration of the holidays. Have a good night, everyone. Thank you all for joining, for coming tonight.